Bruce is here with Sports Lit 101 and another really terrific baseball book.
Yes, this is by author Jim Leek, who we discussed, I think, 2 years ago, Dugout, From the Dugout to the Trenches. He's a historian, a baseball fan, a former member of the Navy, who was fascinated with World War One as a period in history. And I always have been too. Mm. I was the guy who was always more interested in the First War than the Second War, because my grandfather fought in World War One, was in the Signal Corps in France, and he mentioned how he was there when there were famous baseball players there. And not that he was involved with them, but he said he was always very proud of the fact that he enlisted before there was conscription. When I asked him once why, he said, "When I was at Partridge Academy, they told me about Lafayette. What else could I do?" Which I thought was really something special. And he said that again on his 103rd birthday, when the French gave him a medal for his service. So he talked a lot about World War One. He talked a lot about one of the things that plays a key role in this book. When Grover Cleveland Alexander, and we'll talk about how he gets there, is in Europe, he's with an artillery battery, and they never had enough machinery to move the guns. A million horses perished in World War One. And my grandfather said it was also because of a disease called glanders that a lot of the horses got, that they couldn't get enough North American horses, which were bigger, stronger, better bred because they'd been better fed. And they were just chewing up the horses of Europe. And so these guys in the artillery Alexander was there late in the war in 1918. In fact, he was there when the armistice was signed. He was in combat for about 32 straight days.
Wow.
And more than likely suffered from what we'd call PTSD now. And when people talk about Grover Cleveland Alexander, they often make the mistakes of believing that the Ronald Reagan movie tells the true story. You know, which you just don't do with any Hollywood movie. You know, it's not going to tell the true story. It's going to tell a story that sells. He was from Nebraska. He was, a farm kid from Nebraska who could really throw the baseball. He had tremendous heat, had a good slider, decent curve. They had, of course, different names for those things. And at a fairly young age, made it to the Phillies and was a very productive pitcher, had a couple of 30-year wins. Then along comes World War One, and he's never the same again. He was sold before the war began to the Cubs because the Phillies needed money, and he went on to have some good years with the Cubs and go on to play baseball for a very long time. But by that time, he had begun to suffer the effects of alcoholism, and it was an affliction he couldn't shake, an affliction he owned up to. He mentioned it. There were times in his life where he was found wandering in his pajamas in a gutter in a city. And there's the story of him striking out Tony Lazzari when he was allegedly buzzed beyond belief in the 1925 World Series. I forget which exact World Series. But the story is the way Leek tells it is so well done. I mean, you watch this young guy who was known as Pete to everybody. He was known as Pete because he had a friend who gave everybody nicknames, and after a particularly dusty ride in a wagon where they nearly got killed, he looked up and said, "Well, look at old Alkali Pete." and that's how Grover Cleveland became Pete Cleveland to everybody. But he could have been. He is the all-time leader in wins among right-handers.
Mm, 373 wins.
Tied with Christy Mathewson, and the two of them were both injured in the war.
Yeah.
Mathewson was gassed and was never the pitcher he had been before that. And Alexander was at that point being really diminished by the effects of alcohol. And because he was a big star, it was never difficult for him to obtain alcohol, even during the prohibition, for whatever prohibition really was. But what's complicated is he's a complicated person. He signed up for the draft as he was supposed to, as players did. And some players said, "Well, I'm going to volunteer and get in right now." He didn't do that because he was told to wait his turn to see what would happen. Mm-hmm. He could have gotten out of the draft as he was the sole support of his mother. But he chose not to exercise that. He waited to be drafted. He assumed that would happen. Did he play baseball in the Army? Sure. And he was always playing baseball wherever he could, organizing baseball games. They didn't play a lot of them. They had a championship for teams in France and in England that he played in. But he was a person of enormous talent and incredible strength. I mean, he could pitch all the time. He won two doubleheaders.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at some of the numbers here. He had a stretch of 4 years. These are complete games. 32, 36, 38, 34. In that time period, here is innings pitched. 355, 376, 389, and 388 innings. Those were the 4 years before he went into World War One.
Yeah, and there are starting rotations of four pitchers that don't pitch 400 innings.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And he was known for being able to, he had phenomenal control. However, he had, when he was young playing baseball, been beaned badly. He was unconscious for 15 minutes or more. And when he recovered, they believed that he had a vision issue. But his other eye was so good that it could compensate for what was missing. And people think that that traumatic brain injury is really what led to him having the problem with alcohol, that he had suffered such a severe concussion that there was sort of always some of that left, lingering. Then he goes into the artillery, and he's working next to 50-pounder guns and 80-millimeter guns all day for long periods of time, and he's right up next to the sounds of the guns. And a lot of those guys suffered hearing losses. You put all those things together, and this whole story of, was this guy, quote, as they would say, became a common drunk, which is such an insult. I mean, it's people having no idea that alcoholism is a terribly crippling disease, and I've seen that in friends more than once firsthand, that he could have possibly won 500 games. He could have been up in Cy Young territory because he would win 30 a year, 30 a year, 30 a year, 30 a year.
And he didn't start in the major leagues until he was 24.
24 years old, yeah.
And then missed his age 31 season. Most of it, he only pitched in three games that year because he went to the war.
He went to the war, and he would have been, and then he doesn't pitch really the next year. He was mustered out stateside a little sooner because Wrigley or somebody was pulling strings to get him back to Chicago. But he did not apply to come back early. There were people that did, that, you know, major leaguers and the like, that said, you know, you don't need me in the occupation force. There are plenty of people occupy this country. I'll go. He marched 125 miles with a 90-pound pack. They went from Germany to Belgium to Luxembourg. I mean, from France, north to Belgium, east to Luxembourg, and on into Germany. Right near the end of his stint, so he was in pretty good shape. But he said he wasn't in baseball shape. So when he did finally come back, he had to take a couple of weeks to get his arm ready. I mean, a couple of weeks, and he's ready. He's back throwing, and he could throw.
And with all his struggles, this is one of the great age 40 seasons of all time. 1927 at 40 years old. Now, these are ridiculous numbers.
They're insane.
At the age of 40, he went 21-10 with a 2.52 earned run average and pitched 268 innings.
Yeah, and I believe his batting average was 248 or something.
He had 11 home runs in his career.
Yeah.
Yeah. He could hit, too.
He could hit. He was a big guy. He was a big, big, strong guy. But what I think the book will do, and I forget who said this, one of the people that talked about it said it, and that's that it's a book that'll make you very, very proud. Oh, I know, it's it might have been Ken Burns, but it'll make you very proud, because when you learn about, you know, World War One was very unpopular, as we all know, if you've ever studied history. Conscription was incredibly unpopular with a lot of people. Once the ball got rolling, and the United States really committed to it, there were tons of ways to get out of the draft. I mean, it was really, if you wanted out, you could generally pretty much find a way to get out. And a lot of these ball players just thought that, no, that's wrong. They're asking me to do this. A lot of them went to work and, you know, essential shipyard jobs, as we learned about in Leek's other book. But in the end, for Christy Mathewson and Grover Cleveland Alexander, that meant the end of what would have been much more promising careers, and it meant constant personal turmoil for Alexander ever after. He was married, divorced, remarried, divorced, went back to live in St. Paul, Nebraska, and very humble, having to beg circumstances. And this is one of the greatest ball players of all time. Not because he spent all his money, he didn't make all that much money. He at different times donated large sums of money to help others and to do things for people. And I think you will come away with this of a version of a noble but flawed person who really tried to always do his best to do the right thing. And I was really, really touched by this book. It really made me think about the journey from a little farm in Nebraska to the front in a horrible war.
Well, I look forward to reading it. The Greatest Team Over There, by Jim Leek.
Yeah, and we'll get Jim on with us